This is Dr. Z, Zachary Brooks, and welcome back to part 3 of the interview with Dr. Ezra Smith, who studies concussions and depression at Columbia University in New York City. There's an overlap of about 10 seconds, so we can pick up right where we left off in the people behind the PhDs.
Yeah, there are certainly a few other options too. You know, there's psychotherapy, and there's the kind of typical classes of antidepressant medications, and those are certainly kind of the frontline treatments for individuals that are struggling with depression. Those are the first line treatments. And on general, if we take 1,000 people and we give 500, take 1,000 people with depression and we give 500 of them psychotherapy and 500 of them antidepressant medications, overall, the medication and the psychotherapy are about the same. They work about the same on average.
Oh, wow.
Psychotherapy may have a slight advantage in the sense that people, after they're done with psychotherapy, they continue to they don't get worse. They don't relapse as frequently as, for instance, individuals that come off their medication. Relapse is more frequent in those cases. Kind of the more experimental therapeutics, which I'm also interested in, include non-invasive brain stimulation as well as invasive brain stimulation. And so non-invasive brain stimulation, there are some FDA-approved treatments using very mild forms of electrical stimulation where we can inhibit or excite different brain regions that we think are important for depression, and that does seem to work well for some people, not everyone. In the more extreme cases, electroshock therapy is still used in some instances. There's also some very interesting work that's being done with deep brain stimulation. So this includes neurosurgery, where a stimulator is actually implanted deep into the brain. That's still very experimental. We don't really know much about how that works. We think it works, although there has been some inconsistent results. So we're still kind of figuring that out.
So are they, in all of this, you know, therapy and clinical conversation, are there any patients you've come across in your time doing this? I know you're early in your career, that have really affected you. You know, maybe not at a completely emotional level, but at least as a professional, like, wow, that person really is working hard to overcome their struggles. Whatever the patient profile is there any patients really, you know, made you think about what you're doing or appreciate it in a different way?
Of course, certainly. I would say that I think every patient I've had has probably affected me in some way. I mean, people come to me and we talk about, you know, very, very personal things. I don't think, as a therapist, I think it would be really tough to not have some connection to that, or some connection. I mean, the whole relationship is based on mutual respect and trust right at the get-go. And certainly.
Any patient you can talk about, obviously not with revealing any personal details, you could share, make it more specific?
Specific how?
Well, there was a female in her 20s who had X, Y, and Z, and, you know, I learned this, those kind of things.
Yeah. I think, without getting too specific, I think one of the things that I've really learned from working with patients and working with people that are struggling, and it's not just in psychotherapy, but also just family members and friends, is that change is difficult. Change is certainly difficult. And it's important to know that when somebody is struggling with depression, anxiety, addiction, whatever, that at least in all the cases that I've seen, those people want to get better. They don't want to, those people want to get better. They don't want to keep, you know, engaging in behaviors that are bad for them or that don't kind of help them get better. Everybody in their life is usually, if just do this, just do that, things would get better for you. And of course, people want to get better. They want to do better. It's just really difficult, and so many things can kind of get in the way, and it can seem like too much, or it's impossible. And I guess what I see in my role as a therapist is a lot of the time it's not about me giving advice or making suggestions. It's really about kind of doing almost the opposite, because everybody's giving everybody the patient knows is giving them advice and telling them, oh, just do this or do that. And so a lot of times my role really is just holding the person,
mm-hmm.
Metaphorically, of course.
Sure.
And supporting them so that they can have some space to think about, well, okay, if I did want to make some changes, how would I do that? So, you know, pushing people, especially people with mental health issues, rarely works. Sometimes, you know, I would say, you know, there's been a couple cases where being a cheerleader is kind of what the person needed. But in most cases, you know, it's, you know, supporting somebody until they're really ready to say, like, well, maybe if I just started doing this thing and it comes from them, then you can really be in a place to be like, yeah, that's a great idea.
Okay.
You know?
Okay.
Why don't you give that a try?
So you're a guide.
Does that make sense? That was a little more.
No, that was great. Thanks for sharing those depths, because I think those are the things that, you know, touch people. They understand the world through, you know, very small details, and then they can build out from there. That's why I wanted you to drill down. So thanks for sharing that. What do you happen to know the statistics for, in this case, Americans with depression? I mean, there's probably various counts and percentages, but this is obviously super important to a lot of people. Do you happen to know the numbers of people who are affected?
Yeah.
This People Behind the PhDs episode is sponsored by Harp Concepts. Are you an up-and-coming artist with a bright idea? Are you a startup company who needs to prove your concept? Or are you a person who likes to personalize special gifts? Harp Concepts makes high-quality 3D models for a fraction of the price of big-name companies. Learn more at harpconcepts.com. That's harpconcepts.com.
Yeah, absolutely. So there's kind of a couple different ways to measure it. At any given point in time, about 6% of Americans are struggling with major depressive disorder. Those rates are a little different for males and females. They're a little bit higher for females, and there's maybe lots of reasons why that might be the case. Measure it. At any given point in time, about 6% of Americans are struggling with major depressive disorder. Those rates are a little different for males and females. They're a little bit higher for females, and there's maybe lots of reasons why that might be the case. So at any given point in time, it's about 6%. Over the course of your life, any chance of ever having an episode of major depressive disorder is something more like 14 or 15%.
Okay.
And rates over the course of your life of having any mental disorder at all are close to 50%.
Okay.
So to give you a sense of, at some point in your life, there's a pretty good chance that you're going to struggle from something like a mental illness, or you'll meet criteria for a mental health issue. Now, for a lot of people, that are struggling with a mental health issue. Maybe not a lot, but for some people that struggle with mental health issues, they may struggle for a time and then they just get better for no good reason. They just spontaneously remit. Mm-hmm. So that is a phenomenon.
So those three numbers that stand out there, 6% at any given point, 6% of people may have some sort of depression. At any point in your lifetime, 14 to 15% of the people could have some sort of depression. And then your chance, what was the 50% one again?
50% is any mental health issue.
Any mental health issue, okay.
I mean, any mental health, any psychiatric disorder, mental health disorder as defined by the DSM-4 over the course of your life.
And what's the DSM?
The DSM is the book with the criteria. It is the agreed upon consensus definitions of the different psychiatric disorders.
Okay. So to me, these like 6%, 15%, and 50% are really powerful numbers because, you know, the average person can certainly understand these numbers, but they also kind of speak to the power of just descriptive statistics that, oh, okay, well, if it's a good chance that, you know, I or someone I know is going to have some sort of depressive incident or episode or whatever it is in the course of a lifetime, then it's very normal that this person has some frustration. And if it's a very normal thing that someone may have, then we can treat it very differently. To me, that's already a very powerful thing to be aware of, just for the average person. 6%, 15%, and 50%, I think, makes this a very understandable experience for most people. And then hopefully it acts as a trigger to treat people who are in these situations, and it may be us tomorrow, even better.
Yeah. And, you know, one question I think that's oftentimes on a lot of people's minds is, and this is a big question, we could spend hours talking about this, but one of the big questions that people have is, well, what is mental illness? Where do we draw the line between what's just sadness, normal sadness, which has functions and it's important for us to feel sad, versus depression, for instance? And where we draw the line a lot of the times really has to do with impairment. So are you so sad that you can't even make it to work? Are you so sad that you won't pick up phone calls from friends and family members? Mm-hmm. When we start to see that level of sadness, that's really when we start to say, okay, this looks like something different. And somebody who's displaying these kind of behaviors may need some extra help.
Yeah, so I got it.
Of course, we don't go out there and seek out these people though either, right? They have to. We don't proactively approach people to treat their depression.
You don't stop people on the street and say, "Are you depressed?" You don't do
no,
that.
No, okay. They have to be willing participants.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for this. So just maybe one more thing before we finish the episode today. So random thought. I told you I would ask a random thought. And so of these famous Ezras, which one do you most like? So I'm going to list four Ezras. There's Ezra Miller, the movie actor. There's Ezra Taft Benson. Of course, you know him as the Secretary of Agriculture under the Eisenhower administration, 1953 to 1961. Well, at some period in those 8 years, he was the Secretary of Agriculture. Of course, you know him. The other Ezra is Ezra Cornell, businessman and co-founder of Cornell University. And there is, of course, Ezra Klein, columnist for the Washington Post and Bloomberg and an MSNBC contributor. So of the four famous Ezras, which one are you most like?
You know, I don't know Ezra Miller. Hold on, let me look up Ezra Miller.
I mean, I think, you know, the demographic that's tuning into this particular show is really going to be disappointed. This is, you know, this is a big...
Oh, I do know Ezra Miller. I've seen him before.
Yeah, he's got a very, very memorable face.
Hmm. You know, now that I see how handsome he is, I'd say Ezra Miller.
Well, of course.
Um, I don't know. I guess you know you mentioned this Ezra Benson, who's an agricultural secretary. I see myself, you know, very much as a obviously as a psychotherapist, but I spend a lot of the time as a scientist, you know, number crunching, kind of doing very actuarial, tedious kinds of things. So maybe that would be an agricultural secretary.
All right. So the winner today is Ezra Taft Benson. Everyone knows him as the Secretary of Agriculture under the Eisenhower administration from sometime between 1953 and 1961. So thanks for sharing that bit of information, Dr. Ezra Smith.
And terrific.
Thanks for listening to the three-part interview with Dr. Ezra Smith, who studies concussions and depression at Columbia University in New York City. Check out more Dr. Z podcasts at drz.net. That's dr-z.net. You can also follow me on Facebook at DRZ Podcasts and Instagram at DRZNet. As always, happy deciding.